This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Bubble. Hello and welcome to episode 77 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick and I'm the French guy from Switzerland. I almost forgot about that. And joining me tonight is someone who doesn't need to be infected by a virus to sometimes, if not always, say incomprehensible things. It's my good friend Dave. Hello, Dave. How are you?
Stella, forward, moist, 97. Interesting. Travel agent?
how nice of you. Thank you. Unless it was something about my mother. I didn't really get that. But
joking aside, I wonder how long we could actually get away with that if we tried.
I don't know.
Because I've got to say, it was very difficult to do that.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't actually have any trivia for this particular episode, but really? There is a bit of information I can pull out for the end. Obviously, if you haven't watched this episode before, then you won't know what that was about. However, it will become clear, and then I'll give you a bit of information at the end as to how they made it sound realistic.
Great.
Yes.
So in this episode, we are going to review Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 5, Babel. And maybe we'll find something to talk about, or maybe we're going to record this for 3 days and then we don't have to add anything.
Well, you never know with us.
You never know. Absolutely. So No. If you are ready, Dave.
All right, so.
Let's go with our review of Babel. So in the teaser, we are aboard Deep Space Nine, where Chief O'Brien is feeling both overworked and underappreciated. While he and his crew are in the docking pylon trying to free several crew members stuck in a jammed airlock, a Bosleek freighter captain, Jahil, complains that O'Brien hasn't fixed his ship's antimatter flow converter yet. If his ship is left in dock for too long, the perishable goods aboard will be useless. After Jahil exits with a rude comment, O'Brien is summoned to Lieutenant Jadzia Dax's science lab, where an incessant whine has been coming from her equipment. After fixing this, he rushes to Ops to repair a conduit near Major Kira's terminal. Just as he thought he's earned a breather, Commodore Sisko gags on a mug of coffee delivered by the Ops replicator and asks the chief why it hasn't been fixed yet. O'Brien grumpily makes his way down to the command level. Can't have the operation chief sitting around daydreaming when there's work to be done, can we? Ho, 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 I'll get right on it, he says, while leaving, causing Sisko and Kira to exchange looks.
I didn't think that O'Brien was Scottish.
No, I don't know, the Scotty in me just... that could have been Scottish.
It was a relatively convincing Scottish accent.
Thank you.
It's just a shame that O'Brien's character and actor are Irish.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you know me. It's outside of my of my area. So.
French or Irish at best.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I liked how everybody was trying to get O'Brien to do stuff right now for them because everything was urgent and very important. Well, I guess being the only engineer, I think, on the station, he's got a lot to do.
Well, that's the fundamental issue. There is only one engineering type person, operational engineer type person on the station, at least seemingly so. At least on ships, you tend to have a team of people doing this work, not one person. So, yeah, he's going to be spread a bit thin.
Yeah. Although I guess they exaggerated a bit in this episode to, just to show that O'Brien was really busy and working a lot. But yeah, he's a busy man. He's a busy man.
He is. Yes.
After fixing the replicators, O'Brien asks for a cup of hot coffee, black, double sweet, as a test. It tastes fine, but behind the panel, a long hidden electronic device activates and starts sending a signal into the replicator.
That's not good.
No. You know, in the first scene, when Jahil came and talked to O'Brien, he touched his shoulder twice. And I was like, they never touch each other, you know, in the series. They never go and, well, almost never. And I was wondering, you know, knowing that I had read the description of the episode, and I thought, I'm sure that Jahil gave the virus to O'Brien, because that's the kind of clue you get when someone, you know, remember the TNG episode, but the Naked Now?
Yes.
We said that they were touching each other. Well, there was the noise on top of that, but they were touching each other for no reason, just to show us, the audience, that they were transmitting the virus.
And now that you've said that, I now recall from the Naked Time?
On the Naked Time, yeah.
The original series episode. When I was watching it, I was noticing they were being a little bit touchy-feely there as well. So, yeah, you'll often notice this in TV series. If someone is doing something out of the ordinary or out of character, that is then the plot point for the episode.
Yes.
So, yeah, absolutely.
But then we see this thing, and I was like, what's that? And what is it doing here? And I was confused. I don't know if they made that on purpose, you know, having Jahil touch O'Brien or not. But yeah, it worked if it was on purpose.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Right. Act one, then. In Quark's, an angry Markalian customer, Azoth, complains to Quark about his terrible colony's stew, forcing Quark to eat it. Odo recommends Quark ask O'Brien to fix his replicators, but warns Reedy that O'Brien is a very busy man. After Odo leaves the bar, Quark breaks into the Cardassian computer system to find the location of a replicator on the station that isn't broken. In this scene where there were only both of them, only Quark and Odo, well, not they were not the only ones, because obviously they were the customer, but the Quark's was almost empty. And you could almost start to feel the relationship between Quark and Odo as it evolved from last episode, you know, when they were in Odo's office. And now we find them again talking to each other. And it reinforces the fact that those two, they like to hate each other.
Yeah. It was... As this episode progresses, there's a lot more of this kind of back and forth between them. But yeah, I'm loving where they're going with this pairing.
Yeah. Yeah. And when Azoth started to force Quark to eat his stew, then Odo intervened. You could have thought, well, Odo is just going to stay there and enjoy the show. But no, he defended Quark.
Well, he said the words, leave him alone.
Yes. Yeah.
As if he actually cared.
Absolutely, yes.
Which I didn't expect. So, yeah, something there. Now, I did notice, and I don't know whether this was just that Armin Shimmerman was having a bad day or whatever, but Quark actually seemed quite shaken by that confrontation when he was talking to Odo after Azoth had gone. He was very quiet. He was very withdrawn. He didn't have his usual cockiness in his voice. So I don't know whether it was just an actor playing it down, or whether it was the character was actually genuinely affected by that confrontation.
Is it the confrontation, or is it the perspective that he's going to have to close shop because of very low number of customers?
See, I didn't think of that, but that is such a good explanation, that he is a businessman. He is driven, but in fact, he said something during that exchange that it was all about money and profit and trade. But I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, that's a good explanation.
That's possible, yeah.
Where did he get those keys from?
I don't know. He probably had them, you know, from back then when the Cardassians were there.
Again, fair. I just thought it was too easy to break into that system from just, like,
way too easy.
Picked up a couple of things. And he had, like, three or four of these things, and he was, like, saying, this one, no, this one, no. Oh, yes, these ones. Click. Oh, access granted.
Yep.
No.
No. No, that's too easy. That's another thing that's too easy at the end of this episode. We're going to complain about again, because we've already complained about that. But
Involving Quark?
No.
Oh, okay, because I've got a reference to Quark as well.
All right, okay. So we've got stuff to talk about.
A bit easy.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Jadzia Dax, walking along the promenade with Major Kira, discusses how odd it feels. Being female for the first time in 80 years, she clarifies when Kira is confused. They notice Quark is busy as they pass, and Quark himself greets them to say that they are having a little party to celebrate his replicators being fixed, and invites them to join. Kira quickly excuses herself and tells Dax to go in if she wants. Dax is left flustered for a moment before catching herself and smiling at Quark. Back in Ops, Sisko thanks O'Brien for fixing the replicator. He also compliments the chief's wife, Keiko, on being a good teacher to his son, Jake, in the station's new school, which she recently opened. When Major Kira is speaking with O'Brien a moment later, his talk turned to gibberish, which no one can understand. He appears similarly unable to comprehend anything said by anyone else.
Hmm.
We also had a preview of that when Sisko complimented O'Brien. He had a brief moment where he said some gibberish, and then he catched himself and repeated the sentence clearly. This time it was...
Right, yes. Yeah. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
I think I just brushed it off as O'Brien being overworked, but no.
No, that was the beginning. Well, I think it was the beginning of the effect of the virus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I made a note here that at this particular moment in time, I was thinking, actually, this is quite amusing, but it isn't, because what they're portraying here is actually a genuine condition.
Yes.
That can affect people, and it can be quite a serious issue. So if you don't realise that actually this is something that can affect people, you would be forgiven for thinking that it was actually quite funny.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real disease.
Mm.
As far as I know.
Yes, it is, yeah. Yeah, there are, like, I think, two different states of aphasia, which can be combined into a third. But the actors, I mean, O'Brien at the moment, okay, might have given a small spoiler away, really handled the acting and the effects of this condition really, really well. And we'll notice more of that as we go through this episode.
Yes. So shall we take this opportunity to welcome our new guest in our chat room? That's three guests.
Three?
Three.
Three?
Chris from Canada just joined us. Hello, hey. Chris. Welcome to the show.
Oh, yeah.
Three. That must be a record, I think.
No, we've had three before.
Oh, okay. So, sorry, guys. You need to bring someone else.
You need to up your game.
Yeah, we've already done three. Please get someone else. All right, let's go to Act 2. Hmm. Dr. Bashir diagnoses the chief as suffering from aphasia. In effect, the connections in his brain between words and their meanings are scrambled. O'Brien tries communicating by writing on a pad, but produces the same gibberish. As the senior staff discuss his condition in Ops, Lieutenant Dax is suddenly stricken with aphasia as well, unable to communicate with the people around her. In the infirmary, Bashir discovers that a virus has infected the brain's synapses. As other crew members are afflicted, Sisko orders DS9 to be placed in quarantine immediately.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah, I have the same problem in every Star Trek series and every episode where there's a medical condition like that. There is absolutely no precaution taken. The doctor just touches the patient. There's no gloves, no mask, nothing. It's a virus. It's probably they can be contaminated, and they are. But no, there's nothing special. No force field. No nothing. And it's the same in TNG. It's the same in Voyager. It's the same in
the original series.
Yeah.
Yeah. You never see anybody wearing a mask nope. or gloves or a gown or anything like that.
Nothing, nope.
But I would suppose that the medical technology of the time is significantly advanced enough that if there was to be a cold virus, I don't know, Ebola, pick any virus you like, any form of contagion,
mm-hmm.
that they would have the cure for it available or replicable on the ship.
Probably.
But when they're seeing something that they've never seen before, you would think, whoa, hazmat time.
Yeah.
But they don't.
No. Probably because, you know, as a TV series, they don't have time to show us getting into hazmat suit and stuff like that. And it probably doesn't make for a good image, stuff like that. And it requires more props.
Granted, but it's that trade-off, because if you did have the props and all the relevant support material and content to fight and counter this particular condition, you'd actually lose half your storyline.
Yeah.
Because under this circumstance where they have no cure for this thing that they know nothing about, we're in act two now. There's a further 2-3.5 acts of fallout from this exact condition.
Yeah.
So that's why they do it, surely.
Yes. And I was thinking while I was watching this episode, it's time appropriate. You know, they're talking about virus, widespread contamination, isolation, and stuff
like
that.
Life imitating art.
Yes.
Totes.
Odo notices that business is booming in Quark's. When questioned, Quark lies and says his replicators were fixed by Rom. In fact, Quark is surreptitiously using the replicator of a quarantined crew member. Odo, disguised as a piece of furniture, once again, catches Quark in the act soon after this.
And did you spot what Quark said immediately after he saw Odo? He said, "I knew that wheel was sticking."
No, I didn't notice that. It was funny when Odo said, you could have asked to use the replicator, and Quark's response, "Well, why ask when you can take something?" Something like there's a Ferengi saying that, you know, says, "Why ask when you can take something?"
Yeah.
I wonder if he made that on, you know, on the spot, or if that's actually in the Ferengi Bible, quote unquote, as in Bible, as in the book that the TV
yeah.
series got.
Yeah.
But the thing.
Well, if there was a Ferengi species handbook, it would probably just contain that one thing.
Yes, it could. That summarizes the Ferengi way, I guess.
Now, when he was talking about the replicators, he said, I don't get this, so I've obviously misunderstood something, so you can correct me on this. Quark said replicators were fixed by my assistant Rom. But Rom's his brother.
Yeah. Also his assistant in the bar.
Yeah, but why would you refer to your brother as your assistant?
I know.
Surely you would refer to him as his brother.
Yes.
Now, this could be a Ferengi thing where blood is not thicker than water.
Yes, possible.
I don't know. It seemed odd.
I guess in a society where commerce is the key thing, the fact that he's associate or assistant has a greater value as, you know, than the fact that he's his brother. It is more important because it's business related.
Business, yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
Yes.
Also, Odo says that Rom is an idiot, which is not true as the series developed.
No.
Rom is not an idiot at all.
He's not. Apparently he is a very competent engineer and,
yes.
and mechanic.
Yes. I guess it was the beginning of the series. They didn't have all the characters yet. They're
right,
defined.
Right. They were still building them up, I imagine.
Yeah. Sisko finds his son, Jake, standing at the upper level on the promenade after having been playing with classmate Nog. The concerned father orders his son back to their quarters. Sisko is now confronted by Jahil, the impatient freighter captain who is told to stay put. Jael seemed very eager to leave the station, and after what we saw at the beginning of the episode, I thought he had something to do with that.
Oh, okay.
No.
Hadn't thought of that.
All right.
I mean, did we see Jahil earlier?
Yes, at the beginning, when he touched O'Brien on the shoulder.
Oh, of course. Yes. He was complaining about that he hadn't had his antimatter matrix
fixed.
Ujima flip fixed.
Yes.
Yeah. But no, it never occurred to me that he might have had something to do with that.
Okay. And once again, I thought, you know, his reaction is something we have seen, you know, not so long ago when he said, "Oh, I'm not sick. I'm good. I'm going away. I don't want to stay here." And well, how many people did they hear telling me, "Well, I'm not sick. I'm going to go somewhere." Well, no, stay in house.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because you're not sick now or you don't feel sick that you are not.
Where's the proof that he's not infected?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not because he's feeling well now that he's not affected.
Right. You don't know.
No, you don't. You don't.
Mm. I mean, particularly if you mentioned earlier that it could potentially have been Jahil that infected O'Brien by touching him on the arm.
Yeah.
And then it's taken a reasonable period of time for O'Brien to show the effects of the virus. Mm-hmm. Which raises a good point that if Jahil had passed the virus on to O'Brien, either he was immune or the effects of the virus are slower on his species.
Yeah, something like that. But in any case, it's not prudent to leave the station.
No.
And the space station has this advantage of being a station in space. So it's really confined. There's really not a lot of chance for the virus to escape unless someone actually leaves the station with a spaceship.
Right, but the station is also an absolute hotbed.
Yeah.
Because there are so many people coming and going, if you don't lock the station down, mm-hmm. then you're just going to be sending this virus unintentionally in all directions at the same time. But it means that anybody on the station, this virus is just going to go around the whole thing so quickly.
Yes.
Particularly as the medical staff don't wear gowns or gloves or masks.
Back in Ops, Sisko begins to suspect the replicators are spreading the virus. When Odo informs them that Quark has been supplying his entire menu with an infected replicator from vacant quarters on the command level, Bashir checks the station's air and determines that the virus has mutated into an airborne pathogen. They are now all infected. However, the virus has different incubation periods in different people.
Which answers that question.
Absolutely. I don't know. We need a virologist on this show. I don't know if a virus can suddenly get airborne. Is it possible?
Possible. Viruses can mutate.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I only have fiction as a reference point. One of my favorite films is, ironically and topically, Outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
With
Dustin Hoffman
and René Russo. And one of the things that happens with this Ebola variant is it does end up going airborne, something they just did not expect it to do. If a virus feels that it is under its very existence is under attack, it'll find ways to mutate to last longer. And one of the ways of doing that is to go airborne, which helps in its propagation.
Absolutely.
In theory. Yeah. Not a virologist.
Nope. One of the things that Bashir said is that because there are a lot of people and the virus is in a lot of people already, then it can mutate. I guess if it's only in one or two hosts, it's going to die and then won't be able to spread. But if it's in multiple people, then there's lots of occasions to mutate. So
yeah.
If someone is a virologist and listen to this show, please send us an email. feedback@tiangrehot.org.
And come on the show and tell us.
Tell us how wrong we are.
Mm.
Which is, you know, more probable than right.
Well, right. People must be listening to us right now, pointing at their podcatcher and saying, "You're wrong."
Yes.
Well, those people could be guesting.
Absolutely.
So if we do more wrong, we may get more guests.
Yeah. So come and tell us how wrong we are.
We know, but we like to be told.
Right. Act 3. While searching with a tricorder, Kira finds the device hidden in the replicator's pattern generator. By now, 60% of the station population is showing signs of the virus. The replicators have been creating the virus at the molecular level within the food they have been producing. I found that it was a little bit too easy for Kira to find the thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, time and you know, story.
Yeah, and I get it. I get it. Because the way we did it is the camera just went in a straight line towards the further away from the back of the replicator. And we saw Kira having a look around, scanning with the tricorder. And then, without giving it any indication that she knew something was there, she literally reached up behind the panel she was looking at and put her hand straight on it.
Yeah, maybe the tricorder showed something.
Maybe she put it there.
Whoa. Oh, my God.
Yes.
Maybe not.
So, if this device was responsible for replicating the virus within the food, was the virus itself being replicated? Because if it was a device that contained a physical manifestation of this virus, you would have thought that, I mean, we find out in the next section that the device has been there for 18 years. Yeah. So anything that had been there surely would have broken down and died off by then.
Yeah.
So how would something that was put there 18 years ago still be as effective now as it was then, considering it looks like it's only just been activated, this device?
Yeah. The way I understood it when I was watching the episode is that the device was adding stuff in the structure of the replicated food or anything that's replicated. So I guess it would, because if you accept the fact that some machine can synthesize food, then it builds molecule by molecules, and then
right.
it's not completely out there that this device would also add some molecule for a virus. I don't know if it's molecule or atoms or whatever it's called, but see what I mean?
I do. I suppose it's reasonable in that particular time.
Yes.
That building something biological from at an atomic level, it's in a molecular level, is possible.
Yeah. And what Kira said is that food replicators have biofilters. So those biofilters do the opposite. They would
right.
get anything mm-hmm. that's harmful and destroy it. And I guess this thing was added after that, added some
yeah.
nasty stuff in there.
Yeah, precisely. I'm preempting the next line, actually, of the review. But why now?
Yeah, why now?
We know that this device has been there a long time, because you're about to tell us. But why now? Why has this device suddenly come alive?
Probably because Brian, you know, just... He just fixed this replicator, and maybe he did something that activated it, you know, send a pulse of energy or something, or a signal, or I don't know.
I suppose. I don't know.
Don't know either.
No.
While Kira initially suspects Cardassians are to blame, Dr. Bashir's determines that the virus is actually Bajoran in origin, and the device is 18 years old, the same age as DS9 itself, built in 2351. Presumably, it was made and placed aboard the station by the Bajoran resistance, but never activated to carry out their attack against the Cardassians. So there you have your explanations.
Right.
The explanations that Kira gave is that probably the resistance was caught before they could activate the device. But as you said, there's something weird. Why place a device there and not activate it immediately? I mean... Was it to give them time to leave the station and not get infected?
Unless they hope, because when the station was being built, presumably the Cardassians wouldn't have been present in numbers, that they were waiting then for the space station to be activated so that it was in use. You'd have Cardassians all over the place, And then somebody that was still on the inside from the Resistance would then go in and press a button or click a switch or order TL Grey Hot, which is a code word to enable the... that might have been it.
Yeah.
Someone might have ordered something that was the trigger word.
Maybe.
Magic. Yeah. But if the Resistance had broken down by that point, there would have been nobody on the station to actually activate it.
True. So I thought the station was a little bit older than 18 years, but I guess not. I guess not.
Well, what's a year? Because we know a day is 26 hours.
Yes.
Well, so what's a year?
We think it's 26 hours. I don't think we had confirmation of that, did we?
Well, it was assumed, but there was something that Cisco said. It was either he has said it or he's about to say it about something happening within a 52-hour period.
Okay.
Which so would be 2 days.
Yeah.
So, I think it is fairly reasonable to assume. But also, as they're mentioning Terran dates, Earth dates, 2351, then 18 years must be referring to Earth years.
Yeah. And again, as with last week or the last episode or the previous episode, the station is not moving around. Well, it's not moving at all. It's stationary next to the wormhole. So it doesn't make any sense to talk about days and hours on the station unless you're not referring to the station moving around the sun itself. So it's probably Bajoran days or Earth days. Anyways. As Cisco takes Jake, recently afflicted, to crew quarters converted into a hospital ward, he tries to console Dax and O'Brien, but they still can't comprehend one another. The situation soon worsens as O'Brien is found unconscious in his hospital bed. The virus has attacked O'Brien's autonomic nervous system, threatening his life. Bashir tells Cisco that O'Brien will be dead in 12 hours. And that's, that so far I was, I was like, well, okay, if they can function, even if they can't, talk to each other, as Bashir said, is that the cognitive function was not affected. So they still could think and do things. They just couldn't talk to each other. So it could have been hard to work and solve this problem, but it could have been, doable. But now we see that there's a chance that people are, maybe going to die. So it's now beginning to be time sensitive and the pressure
critical.
Is building. Yeah. Critical, yes. Mm. Such a simple world. Just don't know where. I just couldn't think about it.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah.
It's a form of aphasia.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Not enough coffee, I guess.
At nearly 10 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I do have, it's one of my favorite phrases coming up, I do have a fundamental problem with the question of whether they can comprehend each other or not, and I'll make a statement about that later on. But I do want to pick up on two things. The first one is, I think my quote of the week was in that scene. Although I've just remembered another one that was probably equally as good. Cisco and Quark were talking about something. I'm now wondering whether this is actually the right scene or not. Where Quark said, he gave some kind of suggestion as to how this could have happened. Cisco says, no one could be that devious, and walks away. And Quark says, I am.
Yeah. So I wanted to point out a comment in our chat room when Maestro says a virus is not alive. I guess he refers to your comment that when the virus feels threatened or things like that. And I was about to say that you're
right.
Anthropomorphizing. Yeah, that thing when you
anthropomorphizing.
Yes, that's it.
Yes,
yes. It's the easiest way to explain that.
Yes, I wasn't trying to suggest that a virus was necessarily alive, cognizant or whatever, but it was more the fact that a virus can be active or dormant. Yes. In its active state, it will want to propagate.
Yes, because that's what viruses do.
Yeah, exactly. Now, in the scene where Sisko went to the infirmary, because Jake had obviously been affected by this aphasia, a little bit of trivia here. I'm going to read slightly ahead of time. Apparently, Avery Brooks, who plays Benjamin Sisko, thought this was an incredibly important moment to this particular character pairing, because it was the first real scene to hint at any form of genuine physical affection between Benjamin and Jake. Mm-hmm. Because there was quite a touching moment there where Sisko hugged Jake. And I think it's the first time we'd noticed any form of affectionate contact between them at all.
Yeah. Because even in the pilot, when they were talking, you know, before they arrived on Deep Space Nine, they were on this replicated river and stuff like that. It was not that emotional, the relationship between the two.
No, not at all.
I have to agree.
But what's interesting about that is that it was Avery Brooks that introduced that element to their relationship into the storyline,
mm-hmm.
not the scriptwriters.
Oh, okay.
Mm.
Mm. So we're on Act 4 now.
Wow.
Using her old contacts in the Bajoran Resistance, Kira tries to discover the creator of the virus. Her search leads her to a Deacon Elig, a Bajoran Resistance member, but he is deceased. Though through his death certificate, she locates his assistant, Surmak Ren, who was also a member of the Underground. Surmak has now been repatriated to Bajor and is currently a medical administrator at the Ilvian Medical Complex. When Kira contacts him about the aphasia virus, he rudely terminates the connection.
Yeah, he did it.
Yeah, he was guilty. He says, yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. Boop, boop. I mean, he could have said, you know, something believable like, oh, it's a bad line. I'm going, you know, under a tunnel. I can't hear you. Sorry. But no. Instead of that, he terminates the connection, which, you know, in my book says that you're guilty.
He was rude, but he was honest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, because he said he didn't know anything about the virus, so he was not honest.
Okay, fair. But he was honest about the reasons for terminating the call. He was honest because he was lying.
Yeah, okay.
That's what I meant. I hope that's clear.
Quark is still unaffected, for which he credits his Ferengi immune system. Odo warns him that, with DS9's current skeleton staff, Quark will be held accountable for any theft occurring during the quarantine. In the infirmary, as Dr. Bashir continues searching for a cure to no evil, he too is overcome by the virus, suddenly speaking gibberish to the medical computer, and is forced to abandon his research.
So, we're told that the people that are affected by this virus cannot comprehend what other people say to them, mm-hmm. because of this aphasic misfire.
Yeah.
So he doesn't know what it is that he has said until it comes back to him on the screen. So he can still recognize the fact that he said the wrong words.
Yeah.
So the thing about not being able to correctly map the words that you're saying to the words that you think you're saying, and yet he was still able to comprehend that what he said was wrong.
Yes, but the way I understand that is that when you try to speak or write, then you say or write wrong words, you know, not the correct words. But then when you read, you also don't understand what you read. So probably he saw words that didn't make any sense for him. Probably not the same nonsense than we had on the screen. Like, I don't know. Like if he said, I want a glass of water, and instead of that he said, I don't know, the forest is blue. Maybe what he read was the mountain is burning.
Yeah. Okay.
He saw that, and that's what he understood, and he said, oh. I have a problem. So maybe he didn't know that what he said was wrong. He just realized that what he was reading was wrong.
Yes. even though it was doubly wrong because...
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now comes the question, what are the chances that this doubly wrong can make a right? Is there a chance that, you know, it's twice wrong and then it makes it right? I don't know. I'm just...
I don't know, because if the suggestion is that somebody who speaks English to them, they won't understand it, then if it was mapped out incorrectly and then mapped back in the exact reverse order, yeah, then well, they'd actually hear what they should have said.
I don't know. We need the psychologist.
A neurologist. Not a urologist. That's completely different.
Well, that could be useful.
Wow.
Sisko allows Kira to pilot a runabout to Bajor to confront the uncooperative Surmak Wren. She assures Sisko she will not set foot on the planet so as not to spread the virus. She abducts Surmak by beaming him onto the runabout without his permission.
She didn't set foot on the planet.
No, that's true. But again, you can beam pretty much anyone from anywhere without authorization and without any security protocol and just like that. And we had one example of someone being sat on a chair, being transported and materializing, standing up.
Stood up.
Yeah, I guess shortcuts, creative shortcuts for the story.
Yeah, absolutely.
At first, Surmak protests that his involvement with the resistance was minimal, and he is not to blame for the station's current troubles. Kira snaps that she is not interested in assigning blame, just the cure for the virus. Surmak says he doesn't know if Deacon even created a cure. For all he knows, a cure doesn't exist. Kira informs him that she is infected with the virus, and now he has been exposed as well. So anything he knows about Deacon's work had better be put to use, and quickly. They return to DS9 to help with the cure.
That was bang out of order. Totally and utterly out of order. But don't get me wrong, it had the right effect. The means gave the right outcome. But
yeah,
to deliberately put someone... in the exposure of this virus in order to force them to effectively create something in order to save themselves. Okay, brilliant encouragement. Can't fault it. But that is dodgy.
Now, I have a question. I just thought about that, but transporters have biofilters. So now that... they are sick. If they transport somewhere else, wouldn't the biofilter of the transporter get rid of the virus?
But for one thing. Presumably, nobody knew about this virus. Therefore, Norton antivirus hadn't been upgraded with the new definitions. And therefore, the biofilter was not able to filter out the unknown virus.
But Bashir's got the virus signature.
Right, but then you're assuming that it would have been transmitted out to the runabout in time.
I was thinking, you know, maybe on Deep Space Nine, they could have rewritten the biofilter's algorithm to get rid of that specific virus and then transport people out.
Oh, okay. You were thinking from that perspective.
Yeah. I just thought about that because she beamed him in the runabout, and I was thinking, but transporters, biofilters, what if?
You wouldn't need to beam them out.
Yeah, just beam them somewhere in the station.
Beam them back in again. Put them on the pad, dematerialize them.
The virus is still in the station, so you would have to beam them somewhere where the virus is not, and then send some hazmat team in there and get rid of the virus, or open the airlock and get rid of the...
You would need a whatchamacallit. Oh, and it's airborne as well, which doesn't help.
Yeah, no.
If it wasn't airborne.
So you could just open the airlocks and get rid of all the atmosphere inside people. The station for a few...
Oh, sorry, yeah.
You know, for a few... I'm sure the vacuum of space is a great cleaning agent.
I would imagine so.
But yeah, as you said earlier, if they had done that, then we would have lost 75% of the episode.
Mm.
Oh, a virus. Oh, okay, let's reprogram the biofilters. Done. Next.
Who are we to question the storyline? It's just occurred to me that moment that you would have thought that the storyline had been put together in such a way that it fills out the 47 minutes or whatever it is of the episode. So we're like, oh, don't like the way that's been done, or why did they do it that way? Well, they did it that way because that's the episode.
Yes, but in retrospect, you know, you could have probably think of something else to add to this. I don't know, a general power failure or something that, you know, conveniently happened and prevented them from doing that, from reprogramming the biofilters.
Like a Gorn attack or something.
Something, yeah. A giant plastic Gorn.
Mm.
Or come up with some reasons why they could not reprogram the biofilters. You know, maybe I don't know, it's a Cardassian technology and they don't have access to it, or I don't know, something.
Not just sure, but there was no mention of the biofilters from a transporter perspective. They only mentioned it in the context of the replicators.
Anyway, on DS9, Jahil, the impatient and frightened freighter captain, decides to leave the station without permission. However, Sisko refuses to open the docking clamps mooring his vessel to the space station. As Jahil increases power to his engines, the clamps become stuck in place. The freighter's engine begins to overheat, threatening to explode and take half of the docking ring with it.
Whoa.
Wow.
Mm.
Yeah.
Can't be doing that.
Nope. And when he started to, you know, fire up the engine, I was like, oh, that's not going to end well either for the spaceship or the space station. Something is going to give.
Yes. It's an unstoppable force meeting an immovable object.
Yes. Although, I'm not sure about the unstoppable force of the engines, but yeah, something.
Well, if they blow up,
yeah. Good point. Good point.
Mm. It is worth pointing out that if anybody is following along with this in the order in which we're doing this in the review, then you will probably get a bit confused, because I noticed when I was going through the review at the same time as watching the episode, that a lot of these sections were completely out of sequence.
Yeah,
some of the things that we are reviewing as in Act 4, I think were actually in Act 5 and vice versa.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a mess.
I didn't reorder it.
But it was done to simplify it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, talking about Act 5, we're now on Act 5 of the review.
Wow, what a coincidence.
It's like, you know, like you knew.
Well, who knew that Act 5 came after Act 4?
Totally unpredictable.
Yeah. Nah. Totally.
Yeah. Odo suggests they explode the clamps to blow the ship clear of the station, but finds himself soon working alone, as Sisko now succumbs to the sickness.
Right. I have to stop you there. Yes. Sisko knew. He was aware that he had started talking gibberish. None of the others did.
Huh.
Because right at the very beginning, when we were listening to O'Brien, when he was very, very concentrated fashion trying to talk to people to make them understand what he was saying, he gave no indication that he recognized that he wasn't speaking English.
Yeah. True.
So he didn't know that he was speaking some other sequence of words. But the moment that Sisko started saying stuff that wasn't what he intended to say, he immediately realized and stopped talking, because he knew that he had now been affected by it.
Well, I guess being one of the last person on the station not being affected by the virus, it made him aware that was coming. You know, he said previously that he was getting tired and
he knew it was coming.
Yeah,
definitely.
So I guess when he saw the look on Odo's face, he knew.
Mm. Bit convenient.
Yeah, okay. I guess, yeah. When Odo broadcasts a call for help throughout the entire station, help arrives in the form of Quark.
That's not help.
One of the few people left unaffected. After smugly advising Odo that they can discuss his compensation later, Quark assumes control of Ops, beaming Odo directly to the docking ring. Kira is stunned to find Quark answering her hail as she returns to the station. After boarding and showing Sumac to medical, however, she becomes the virus's latest unintelligible victim. Now explain to me how Quark is able to run Ops. I mean,
that was my next statement. Yeah.
He's probably not qualified to run Ops. I mean, he said he served on the Ferengi vessel for 8 years, I think he said. But that probably has nothing to do with running a space station.
Well, 90% of the stuff you would find on a spaceship, you wouldn't find on a space station.
Exactly.
Because there's no navigation, engineering in that perspective, in that particular context. But if you think about who Quark is, he's been on the station since the beginning, mm-hmm. I believe, mm-hmm. if I remember rightly. So it is entirely probable that with him being as crafty and manipulative as he is, he may have spent some time up on Ops and watched people as they were using the controls and remembered it.
As he said, he witnessed the procedure to beam someone a million times.
Yeah, which scared Odo. Quite, what, you witnessed it, but have you ever done it? Beep, 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 beep. Engaging. Energizing, sorry.
Energizing, yeah. Odo rescues the babbling freighter captain and jettisons the doomed ship just in time before it explodes. Sir Mac Wren, whose memory is refreshed about the virus once he looks at Dr. Bashir's notes, quickly develops an antidote for the virus, curing everyone. Yeah, that's easy when someone else has done 90% of the job. Oh, I will put this here. Oh, done. A little bit too easy once again, but,
It's like they got to 43 minutes and thought to themselves, crap, we haven't finished yet. We've got all this to do. Oh, well. And they all lived happily ever after.
Yes. Something like that, yes, indeed.
It's a common thing in TV, generally. Yeah. It's not limited to Star Trek at all.
Nope. As things begin to return to normal, Sisko welcomes O'Brien back to Ops, only to find a moment later that the replicators are faulty once more.
Right.
Yeah, right. A good story. Well, who doesn't like a virus story nowadays? But I think maybe this could have been a two-parter, or at least a 1 hour instead of 42 minutes. I'm not sure they did that back then, but it felt like there was a few shortcuts here and there.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. I think if they'd taken the first four acts as is, and then extended the fifth act to a further four acts, and done it as a two-parter, that would have worked much, much better. That whole last section, it was on fast forward.
Yeah. The emphasis on the development of the disease and the fact that the situation got, very critical. I mean, when Quark is running Ops, the situation is critical.
It's critical. Right.
And then they just, they just say, okay, well, we're going to just spend one act on finding the cure and curing everyone. I mean, why not? But it still felt a little bit rushed in the end.
Can't disagree with you. I wonder if Quark will get... he can't get discipline, can he? Because he's not a Starfleet officer. But
no.
I would imagine he would get told off rather severely. Because I don't imagine he's qualified to operate Ops.
Well, in a desperate situations...
That's my approach.
Yeah. So
it's the equivalent of going out to the cockpit and saying, "Does anyone know how to fly a plane?"
Well, yeah, exactly.
With every airplane tragedy movie there's ever been, it's always been is there a doctor in the house, and does anybody know how to drive fly a plane?
Yeah. So I don't know if it could be. It's a good question, actually. What can happen to Quark if he does something wrong? Let's just qualify that. Because he can't be disciplined. He's not a Starfleet officer. He's a business owner. Can he be thrown out of the station? Probably, I guess.
I would imagine it depends on the outcome. Because if you do something wrong as part of a military outfit, and this is where we could probably do a Nate to help us on this one, mm-hmm. then you would be governed by the laws of the military. Yeah. You would be tried under a military court.
Yeah.
But if you're a civilian and you do something wrong, then you're heading towards the route of criminality.
Yes.
Not necessarily intentional, but if your actions result in the death or serious injury of somebody else, that still classifies as crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it's technically the Bajoran law being applied on Deep Space Nine. With the station being
It's a Bajoran facility.
So I guess he would be trialed as a civilian in a civilian court of law.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd think so.
So yeah, I guess if he was to kill someone, he would be imprisoned, I guess. So but for that kind of action, I don't know if there's something that can happen to him.
I don't want to go too deep down this rabbit hole because the whole question of this is very much open to interpretation, and particularly to somebody who is not versed in law.
Yeah.
But a huge part of it is proving intent.
Yes.
If you intended to save lives and you failed, what's the difference between your action and the outcome and your inaction and the outcome? So if you ended up killing 10 people because of what you did, but if you'd not done that, it would have killed 100, then that's the greater good.
Well, we need a lawyer on this show.
Is there a lawyer in the house?
So if you're a lawyer and you're listening to this show, please send us an email, or better yet, come and host an episode with us. You know, maybe we can do an extravaganza with a lawyer, a neurologist, an astronomer. I don't remember what we talked about 2 weeks ago, and we needed someone.
A lawyer, for sure. A neurologist, and an astronomer walk into a bar.
Starts like a joke.
Exactly. Have you noticed we've moved on from, ladies and gentlemen, I'm looking for another co-host, to, ladies and gentlemen, I'm looking for another professional?
Yes. Yes. Well, other than that, do you have any... you said you didn't have any trivia, but you had some stuff.
I do have one bit of trivia. I just want to quickly summarise the episode from my perspective. I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. I'm not going to turn around and say we need more virus-related television at the moment, because we get all that, you know, the news.
Yes.
But... no, I thought it was really good. I love the character work. The storyline was good. It wasn't amazing. It wasn't brilliant, but it was good. Nice bit of character building in various places. That's it. That's all I've got to say. It was a good episode.
Yeah, I agree. As I say, a bit some shortcuts here and there, but all in all, a good episode. Yeah.
It's one of those things we need to learn to accept, because it's going to continue happening. Because when they're trying to cram so much into a single episode.
Yeah.
And if you look at what we were watching in this episode, you had a number of like mini storylines running alongside this one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
True. It's really difficult to fit all that into 40 something minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wish they didn't have to.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I had one piece of trivia. I mentioned it earlier on, actually, about the dialogue, the aphasic dialogue that they were using. Michael McGreevy, he wrote the teleplay for this episode. And I think it's his only credit, actually. Yeah, I think it's his only teleplay credit for DS9. And he said this: as I was writing the dialogue, I was very worried about how it would come off. At first, I just wrote gibberish, and I realised that was a mistake, because the person who was speaking was actually trying to say something, so it couldn't just be gibberish.
Mm-hmm.
So I literally had to say the lines out loud. And then on paper, put the real meaning of those words in brackets, so keeping the rhythm the same. So when the words were being said, there was actually genuine dialogue behind it, but the words that they should have said were replaced by words that didn't actually make any sense, but it was said in the same way.
Okay.
He said it was almost like writing poetry, because I was like using a meter, like an iambic pentameter. Not sure what one of those is. I think it helped the actors in delivering the lines, but it was rather frightening to write.
I guess so, yeah. What is an iambic pentameter?
Pentameter. A pentameter or pentameter. Iambic. I-A-M-B-I-C.
That's something to do with... It's a type of metric line used in traditional English poetry and verse drama. The term describes the rhythm or meter established by the words in that line. Rhythm is measured in small group of syllables called feet, and so on and so on. Refer to your friendly Wikipedia for more information. We'll stick that in the show notes.
Because of how Memory Alpha works, and they really just dig so deep into the production side of these episodes and how they're produced, to find this level of detail, it's not just about the script and the acting and the production and the cinematics and the things you see and hear. You get really deep into the creation of these episodes and how they came to be and the reasons and the decision-making process of where it got to.
Yeah.
And I find that probably more interesting than the episode itself.
Or at least as interesting as.
It depends.
I like all the making ofs and documentaries about series of, or even movies.
Right.
I guess you still haven't seen What We've Left Behind, the documentary about Deep Space Nine.
No, not yet. I will have a look.
Yes.
Nice.
Right. If you don't have anything else about this episode.
I do not.
Then we shall end this review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode 5, Babel. Thanks to all of you for listening to our show. You can help us spread the love for this podcast by scribing gibberish post-its and trying to make them pass as scientific publications. Or if you think there is a risk that someone actually discovers something meaningful in those, you can simply share the address of our website on social media.
And you can find our website at tlgreyhot.org, where you will find all of the show notes for every episode we have ever produced, all of our reviews, and you can leave a comment on the bottom of every episode.
Absolutely. If you want to send us gibberish via email, you can do so at feedback@tlgreyhot.org. If we don't understand what you write, there is a good chance we're going to read it on the show. So if you don't want us to associate your name with that, just make sure you tell us.
Yes. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. Our username for both of those is TEGH Podcast. So please feel free to share your gibberish with us on those. And did you notice that gibberish and TEGH, very similar? TEGH, gibberish. Yeah. And we're also on Telegram at t.me/TEGH Podcast, where the only place you will get the link to our unlisted YouTube live streams. You can come and watch us deliver our gibberish directly into your ears live.
Absolutely. Thanks to Memory Alpha, as always, we have based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license.
And the rest of this show is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution share alike license. See our website for full details of what that means.
This podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. Check out our website at otherside.network for our wonderful and amazing list of podcasts and hosts.
Indeed. Our next episode will be our review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode 6, Captive Pursuit.
Absolutely. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you, Dave, for joining me once again.
Very welcome you are. I've got to say, I am really enjoying Deep Space Nine. To say that I'd never watched it before, I might have seen maybe one episode in my entire life. And that was episode five.
Yeah.
If you count the
two-parter.
The pilot's two-parter. And yeah, I'm actually really, really enjoying it. I'm just really surprised why I never took the opportunity to watch it the first time around.
Yeah. and it's only going to get better.
Good.
So that's it for this week. We will be back next fortnight with a whole lot more Star Trek. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya.
In fact, Quark is surreptitiously using. It's getting really, really. I can't find my words tonight. Kira snaps that she's not interested in Asana.
Yep.
Ding, ding, ding.
Thanks for listening, watching, being there.
Well, so that's it for this week. We will.
Well, you might be back next week. Yeah.
You've been listening to a member of the Otherside Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.